your voice I often hear. Another day, another night, I long to hold you tight. 'Cause I'm so been losing sleep. Andy, I need your gloving. Got to have fuzzy gloving. Andy, I need your gloving. Got to have fuzzy gloving. Wednesday nights, I call your name. Will I ever be the same? When you see me smile, you know things are just getting worse. And a smile you might see, Andy, has all been rehearsed. Andy,
welcome to the Fuzzy Glove Hour, the radio stunt program that loves you desperately. I'm station manager Ken, your co-host for the Fuzzy Glove Hour.
I'm Andy.
You don't want to take credit for being the host
of the Fuzzy Glove Hour?
Yeah.
I'm trying to maintain plausible deniability.
You were just clapping along with the theme song here.
I was clapping for the opening act. Scott Williams, our opening act.
He's not really our opening.
Yeah, he got the audience all pumped up for us. He made it easy for us.
Okay.
Let's keep it going for Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Way to go, Scott Williams.
Who's your opening act in your for your morning show?
Wake and Bake with
Clay. Oh, that's a great opening act.
With Clay Pigeon. They're not really opening acts. It's like the show before.
Yeah.
I guess you could think of it as an opening act.
I guess you could, and I'll prove it. Yeah. I just did.
Okay. Good for you.
Thanks, Kenny.
Yeah.
How was your morning show?
It was great.
Not what I heard.
Really? What did you hear?
Heard it went off the rails almost immediately.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you give me more details?
No. That's the word on the street.
Because I played a song. I did play a song.
You try your best. You are as God made you.
I think you would have liked it.
What did you play? What was your first song today?
Toxic.
Yeah.
You know the Britney Spears song?
No.
That was my first song. That was my opener.
Now, when did you decide on that being your opener? As you drove into the station?
No, I think yesterday.
Yeah.
I think I saw a movie that had a version of it, and I thought, like, oh, I should play that song. And I played the same song for my second song as well.
You played it again?
Yeah. And then when time for song three rolled around,
yeah,
played it again.
We're going to have a little talk later.
Played the same song for 3 hours.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. How conceptual of you.
Yeah. People seem to dig it.
The word entertainment is a funny word, isn't it? To one person, it means satisfying an audience.
Yeah. Who does that? Who's that?
Who's anticipating their needs and desires and meeting those needs and desires.
Who
and
are you describing?
Them. And to other people, it means playing Britney Spears over and over.
Well, I didn't play Britney Spears. I just played the song.
Oh, you played different versions of it?
Yeah.
Attaboy.
There you go.
Attaboy.
Yeah, I didn't play Britney Spears.
Attaboy. How you doing there, Ken?
It was a free Britney show.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah. You're not down with the Free Britney movement.
I don't know. I know there's a documentary that is entertaining.
Yeah. I guess you haven't seen it.
No, do you recommend it?
I haven't seen it either. Well, we have a big show tonight.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Very exciting. We're going to be interviewed by Good Morning America.
Well, not Good Morning America, but another show.
Charlie Rose.
Interesting story. I met a man last week.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have a podcast. A man without a podcast.
Yeah. Did you catch him?
Interesting guy.
Did you catch him and keep him?
Well, he had a little podcast.
Oh, I knew you were exaggerating.
Yeah. Everybody has a podcast.
No. Somebody emailed me today who did not have a podcast.
Really?
Yeah. He wanted to interview us, but he admitted that he didn't have a podcast.
Man without a podcast. You could almost do a whole movie about him.
Yeah. Burt Lancaster should play that guy. The man without a podcast.
What a great reference, Burt Lancaster. Are you a Burt Lancaster fan?
I am.
He had a hell of a torso, didn't he?
You know, I don't know how many Burt Lancaster movies I've seen, but Sweet Smell of Success.
Yeah, well, you can't beat that.
It's such a great movie.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
Yeah. And he played the Birdman of Alcatraz, didn't he? That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
I was thinking the man without a podcast reminded me of the Birdman of Alcatraz.
Because it almost had the same number of syllables?
Yes.
Yeah, I can see. I can
man
see.
Man without a podcast. Six syllables. Birdman of Alcatraz. Six syllables! That's why!
Well, this is as stupid as it gets. Really, it doesn't get stupider.
No, it does. It always gets stupider. As stupid as you get, you can always get stupider.
That could be our little motto for our show, the Fuzzy Glove Hour.
Yeah.
It always gets stupider.
It can always get stupider.
Yeah. How about this? The Fuzzy Glove Hour, where anything can happen, but it doesn't. So what are we doing? Wait, so we have some listeners, they have a podcast, and they're going to interview us.
Yeah.
And you've given them time slots.
Right.
What's the first time slot?
Douglas.
Yeah.
Who you know as the host of Beyond All Limits.
Oh, great.
From Radio Valencia in San Francisco.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
What do you know about that particular project, that show?
Radio Valencia?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know much about Beyond All Limits, but I have visited the studios of Radio Valencia. They were very nice.
Yeah.
They had a good board, good audio console.
That's what you remember about the radio station?
Yeah, it was really cool because
That is faint praise.
Yeah, they somehow combined, well, I never saw any station do it before. They combined a broadcast turntable setup with a club turntable setup. They had both going on. Very impressive.
Which enabled them to do what?
I don't know. And then, Andy, at 6:30.
Yeah.
You're not going to believe this.
Okay.
But Brett from Up All Night from Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Okay.
Is going to be interviewing us.
Looking forward to it.
And then at 6:45.
Yes, sir.
It's Aaron from Minneapolis.
Oh, he's a friend of the
show. Friend of the show.
Yeah.
KFAI in Minneapolis.
Does Aaron call in other shows?
Yes.
No,
he doesn't. No, he only calls in Fuzzy Glove Hour. Mm-hmm. Is that what you want me to say?
I don't care. You say whatever you want, buddy.
Yeah, man, you're logy today.
I am a little bit. Yeah. I'm a little off, but...
Yeah, why don't you explain what's wrong? tell the nice people what's wrong.
It's been a long week.
Yeah, you made a little miscalculation.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
That's true. I got walloped today. I got hit with a tax bill today.
Yeah.
Now, you don't pay taxes, so you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Right.
It's like a science fiction.
How big of a tax bill?
It's a big tax bill.
How big?
I forgot about the capital gains act. We're selling our little place in New York.
Right. Oh, an apartment in New York City.
We bought it cheap. We bought it 1997.
Yeah.
We held on to it.
Right.
We're selling it now. The market is hot. It's a seller's market.
For millions you're selling.
Well, not millions.
Millions.
But not millions, but...
A million?
Not a million, but we're going to see a profit on it. And then I was reminded today that we owe money on that.
And how much money do you owe?
Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to... Like the end of The Godfather?
Yeah.
Where Al Pacino said to Diane Keaton, you can ask me once, and then you can never ask me again. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to give you one number. You can say one number, and I'll say whether it's high or low. Okay. One number. And wait, and what number are you guessing? The sale price?
No, the tax bill.
The tax bill. Well, then I have to figure out how much I paid.
Oh.
Okay, I think I know the...
It's around a third.
The tax bill is a third of your profit.
Right.
So you subtract
right.
the current value from what you subtract what you paid from the current value.
So I'm guessing that your tax bill is $180,000.
That's high.
Bingo?
That's high.
And by high, you mean bingo.
I wish I could say bingo because it looks like fun. I'm watching you say it. But I envy you for getting to say it as much as you do.
Yeah.
But I can't honestly say bingo.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, look, it's a big... The tax bill is extra big because I didn't expect it. I was so naive and misinformed.
Yeah.
I didn't remember about the capital gains.
Right.
So that's why it hit hard.
That's all
good. If I had a few weeks to stew on it, it wouldn't have hit so hard.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a long story, long-winded way of me asking for a raise here.
Right. Well, instead of me giving you a raise, you could just scale back that proposed renovation of the masturbatorium. I don't think it needs to be 10,000 square feet. Why does a masturbatorium need to be that big?
To land my helicopter. When I'm in a rush. Sometimes I got to get there.
So it has a retractable roof now? It's like out of a James Bond movie?
I know. Yeah, it's my lair. I now call it my lair.
You're in a crater, in a volcano crater? All right.
There is actually a downside. There is an argument against building your lair in a volcano crater.
What is it?
The volcano itself.
Oh.
There's always a risk, a small risk.
Small risk, right. It might be an extinct volcano, a dead volcano.
But no one had the nerve to say that to Dr. No.
No. Well, he had the sharks.
Wait. No, Dr. No was not in the volcano.
It was Blofeld. Blofeld was in the volcano.
In the Japanese one.
I don't know.
Thunderball.
I don't know. I just remember.
Oh, you only live twice, I think. Oh, I don't know.
Let's call up Douglas.
No, we're too early.
No, we're not.
We are. No, we're 2 minutes early. I'm not going to give him extra time to humiliate me.
This is a little weird that we're calling them and then they're interviewing us. So why don't you explain again the concept of tonight's show?
What are you?
Okay, we were going to invite people to interview us. Andy's premise being that everybody has a podcast.
We anticipated dozens of responses.
Right, we thought we were going to have 20 interviews. We were originally going to do this last week and we had 5 interviews. But by rescheduling, we lost 2, so we're down to 3.
Hold on. 5 interviews.
Right.
Rescheduled.
And we lost 2.
Hold on.
5 minus 2.
Did you get 3?
That's what I got.
Me too.
For 5 minus 2. All right, we match. We're a match.
Okay, and the first interview will begin in 45 seconds. Just don't start it early. That's all I'm asking. I asked for so little.
I need time to dial.
Okay. Okay, you can dial in 10 seconds.
Okay.
Are you dreading this?
I'm not dreading it at all. What is your problem? You obviously have a problem with being interviewed.
I do. Yeah. I've never been happy with how I sound.
Oh, what do? You listen back to it after it's
over?
No, but
no, when people quote me and I see my words in print, I'm always wish I could rewrite it or have things. I talk too much.
Wow.
I'm put at ease by these interviewers and then say too much.
Oh.
My tongue is a little loose.
Right. I heard you get interviewed by Terry Gross.
Oh, that was years ago, right?
Yeah, for Monk, I think, right?
When I was interviewed by the guys writing the Saturday Night Live oral history,
mm-hmm.
They took me to lunch, they put me at ease, they flattered me, they cajoled me, it was very sweet. They bought me a tuna fish sandwich.
Uh-huh.
And I just talked too much.
But
my defenses were down.
I read all your quotes.
Well, there's stuff in there I regret saying.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what? Say it again.
No, I will not say it.
Oh, all right.
So I have to learn to be more disciplined. Are you disciplined and guarded when you're interviewed?
No, always. Always disciplined and guarded.
Oh, I'm going to say something stupid.
Jesus. Why did you want to do this?
I don't know. It was something to say. I remember we were on the phone and I hadn't spoken in a while.
Oh, it's Doug.
Hey, Doug. It's Ken and Andy on WFMU, the Fuzzy Glove Hour.
Hi, Ken and Andy. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear.
Doug. Now, Doug, now you're on the air here in New Jersey. Are we on the air there as well?
My show airs Mondays at 10 o'clock, so it'll be taped, and I will be airing this segment Monday.
Will you be airing it unedited or raw, or will you be going through and cleaning it up?
Oh, I ain't cleaning up nothing.
All right. That's how we
no
like
time
it.
For that.
That's right. You have a life.
Not getting paid, you know.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me. Ken.
Yeah.
You should pay me.
I should.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks,
yes.
Thanks for
You're
reminding
welcome.
Me.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for nothing. So now we pass over the controls of this dialogue to Doug. He's the host.
I know.
Okay.
You Doug. Know, as the phone was ringing, I was reminded of how terrible of an idea this is on my part. But, you know, good luck.
Thank you, Doug.
Good luck to all of us.
We are thrilled.
Though, Andy, I'll say one thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about anything being misquoted from this interview. I guarantee that.
Okay. Well, I know you're just going to put it on as is in real time. I know this interview is not a contest, but I have to say I genuinely hope you like me better than Ken.
We'll see.
Okay.
Okay. I just...
I'm going to spend the next 14 minutes charming the pants off this guy.
Okay.
Okay.
I just laid out some basic questions.
That's how you do it. Great. That's a great plan to pre-produce it, laying out basic questions. Exactly. Okay, that's how the pros do it.
Let's just get started here. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, guys. If you could be a dinosaur, which dinosaur would you be?
Dilophosaurus.
Why?
Have you seen Jurassic Park?
Yes.
Yeah. Remember the dinosaur that killed Newman?
Yeah.
That's the one.
Okay. Andy?
First off, great question. Perceptive, brilliant, insightful. I do have one question myself before I answer. What would you say is the what dinosaur would you say is the natural enemy of the Dilophosaurus?
Well, you could just say the T-Rex.
T-Rex.
Everyone's enemy.
T-Rex. That's my answer.
Okay.
I would be in the back seat of Newman's car. Ken would devour Newman, and then he'd be in for the biggest birthday surprise of his life.
T-Rex, you need a big car for a T-Rex to hide in the back seat.
Damn. Good point, Ken.
Yeah.
Damn. That's true. For a T-Rex to hide in the back seat of a car, it would have to be a full-size sedan.
Escalade.
An Escalade.
Oh, man, this is terrible.
No, this is great. So far, you're doing great.
We're so happy to be on Beyond All Limits on Radio Valencia.
Yes, and if I could plug Radio Valencia real quick, we're an internet radio station. We also archive all our shows as podcasts.
You guys have the best audio console.
On 22nd Street.
You guys have the best audio console I've ever seen.
Ken won't shut up about the damn audio console. Now, what kind of audience? Do you know anything about your audience?
Like who's interviewing who here?
He's interviewing me.
I know nothing of my audience. I try to keep it that way.
Exactly.
Okay.
When my show's over, I just make a mad, crazy dash to my car. All right, go ahead. Now we have another question.
Ken, Andy, who's your best friend?
Well, Andy's my best friend.
Well, I know Ken is just saying that. I know Ken has numerous friends. Ken's very, very social. You know, if you read that Malcolm Gladwell book, you know the Malcolm Gladwell book about, I think it's called The Tipping Point, where he describes, it's an interesting, you know what's very interesting? He makes an interesting point in that book. He says, for almost everyone in the world, your best friend has many more friends than you do. That's true for most people, because there are people like Ken that have many, many friends, and I have very few, for obvious reasons. And
yes, of course.
But it's not uncommon. So if I say Ken is my best friend, he's someone with a wide social circle, And I think that's how it often is. And his social circle includes me. His social circle includes many other outcasts like me.
But you are my best friend. You really are.
Oh. Well, I guess you're my best friend, too. I mean, can I add Beth to the list?
Oh, so you're just trying to bandwagon onto Ken's friend.
Your wife?
My wife, Beth? I have slightly more sex with her than I do with you.
Yeah.
That's why I'm thinking.
It's been a long time with us.
Oh, it is. Well, damn COVID.
Yeah.
Now, can we ask this guy who's his best? Wait, what's
no,
his name?
No, you're not interviewing him.
No.
Beyond All Limits with Douglas from Radio Valencia is interviewing us.
Beyond. Let me ask you something. Wait, what's his name? Beyond? All the Limits?
No. What do you think his name is?
Beyond?
The name of
his school, mate. The more you talk, the less dumb questions I have asked.
Oh, yeah, the name of the show is Beyond All Limits.
I gotcha. So he has a normal human name.
Right.
That makes a lot more sense now.
It starts with D.
Yeah, Valencia.
Okay.
Go ahead. What's our next question?
Go ahead, Doug.
Go ahead.
Next
Doug.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Andy, I think I might know your answer, but I do not.
Okay.
Who's your worst enemy?
Well, it's a good question. I really work hard in my life to appease people and not make enemies. When I know Don McLean and I have had exchanged words, and that actually became newsworthy for a minute or two. When I, one time years and years ago, I backed out of my driveway and hit my neighbor's car. I sideswiped my neighbor's car as I backed out of the driveway. And I just went running over to his house with a blank check. Said, whatever it costs to fix, just fill it in. I just don't want people mad at me. I know you wouldn't believe that from how I comport myself on the radio.
Yeah, you're saying wealthy people have no enemies.
I guess don't want people that I know and that I will cross paths with to be mad at me. I just can't stand that. So I bend over backwards to appease people. But I guess Don McLean would be on my list. Ken, do you have an enemy?
Well, I think I am many people's enemies. And I am many people's worst enemy. But I don't have any enemies myself.
Wait, now, Ken.
I am an enemy.
If I could correct you, I believe, Ken, you are your own worst enemy.
Oh, yes. There is that. Yeah. Yes.
There is that. That's why I'm here, buddy. That I've got your back.
Okay, good answers, I think. I hope. Okay, this one's a little deeper.
I'm
Would you rather slide down a slide or swing on a swing?
Swing. Why do you scoff at that?
I was thinking about something else.
Okay. Swing or slide, Andy?
Is that a real question?
Yeah.
But I mean, it depends. There's so many factors involved.
Ropes, like rope swing.
When you're at the Grey Wolf Lodge and there's a giant water slide that goes around and around and gives you the thrill of your life, you would say, I can't wait to slide.
Yeah, but I like a rope swing. Do like a rope swing.
Rope swing's good. When you said swing, I was hoping you meant something else. I was hoping you meant like the neighbors kind of, like your neighbors.
I already know your answer to that.
You have a shot at your neighbor's wife.
Oh,
you know,
Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, that kind of thing. Yeah.
When we have people move into my street, I'm always very excited. And I always ask them, hey, you guys swing?
Yeah, well, a hat full of keys.
Yeah, exactly. And haven't met anyone yet that swings, that says yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunate.
Would you rather go down a water slide, Ken, or bang your neighbor's wife? The water slide at Grey Wolf Lodge, the big one.
I can't even. I don't even know if any of my. Oh, okay. I am thinking about. All right.
Okay, that's a tough one, isn't it?
The water slide. No question.
It depends how cute the wife is.
It depends if the house is on the left or the right.
Water slide. Water slide, please.
My answer is water slide, for God's sake. By all that's holy, water slide.
All right. Andy, what's your favorite flavor of gum?
What's yours?
I like gum. hurts my jaw.
He's interviewing you, Andy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I like Double Bubble because it's the best gum. That's probably why. What's your favorite flavor of gum, Ken?
Juicy Fruit.
Loser.
Come on. Juicy Fruit.
Oh, I forgot about the part.
Yeah, Chief. The Chief.
What's your favorite flavor of gum, Doug?
You already asked me that.
What was it?
I said I don't like gum.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Well, it was over 30 seconds. Over 30 seconds ago.
I have a life. Right?
Yeah.
All right, let's see if I can get anything better than that. I don't think I do. If you guys had a parrot, what would you teach it to say?
What would you?
Well, probably something I can't say on the air. Actually, no, I would just teach it to say I'm a parrot. That's what I teach it to say.
What would you teach your parrot to say, Andy?
I guess I teach it to say, Andy, put that knife down. So when neighbors come over, they'd be very concerned about the welfare of my family. As if the parrot hears it three or four times a night. What would you teach your parrot to say, Kenny?
How do you get blood out of a carpet?
Wait, you should have a parrot in this studio. The FMU parrot. Wait a minute. Don't I pledge enough every year to insist on a FMU parrot?
Go ahead, get the FMU parrot.
Would you put it in the studio?
We had a hermit crab.
Oh, I know that. But
remember that?
Would you allow a parrot in the studio, even though there's a risk it may make noise or squawk?
It's okay by me.
Well, what does that mean? Do you have to get approval of everyone else?
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't impose a parrot on every DJ.
What a great staff meeting that would be. Everyone, I'd like you to meet Polly.
I think most people would probably like it.
Yeah. That would be great. If you want to soak me next year, that's my condition.
That we put a parrot in the studio?
Yeah, you get a parrot, you get a cage.
For a year. Well, I mean, somebody's got to clean it and feed it and all that kind of stuff. Who's going to do that?
Well, don't you have volunteers come in?
Not parrot volunteers.
You will get a parrot volunteer. You think that's below the below?
All right, okay. We'll go to Washington Square Park and we'll find ourselves a parrot volunteer.
You think the volunteers that come in would balk at being asked to do that?
Yeah.
How about the one that wipes your ass every evening? Maybe it'd be a nice break for them.
He got a promotion. So he's not doing that anymore.
Now he's wiping your ass every morning.
Well, Dan, sorry, Doug. Sorry, Doug. Doug. This has been great.
It's been great, Doug. You really you really peel back every layer of this onion.
And this is airing on Radio Valencia next Monday night at 10 p.m. Is that Pacific time?
That is Pacific time. I should mention that, yeah.
Pacific time.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned which time zone it was in.
Time zones are important.
I never remembered for you guys.
That's true, man. And then, Doug, what do you do for a living, like in real life?
I'm a projectionist. I work at a cinema.
Cool.
Oh, I thought that was a dying art. Is it old school projection or digital?
Yeah, a lot of that, yeah. And it is a dying art.
Yeah. What is the cinema? Oh, I love projectionists.
Yeah.
Turn it on me now. Pacific Film Archive. It's in Berkeley.
Wow. Oh, we did a show. Remember, we did a show where we actually had a projectionist on the air with us for the whole hour, I think.
To spoil something. Some movie that was opening.
To spoil a blockbuster or something like that. Yeah.
I did not hear that one.
You know what I do when I go to the movies and pay full price for a movie and the movie sucks?
What do you do?
I wait for the projectionist out back and beat him to a pulp. I get so mad at him.
He's just doing his job.
Yeah, that's what they all try to say.
All right, Doug, we're moving on to our next interview. Thanks a lot. Good luck at Radio Valencia.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
How do you think that went?
Terribly.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It was so disjointed and...
Boy, I it's like you heard a different interview.
Wow, you liked it? You thought it was good? Okay. Great.
I thought we were kind of on our game.
Oh, good. Okay. I was just thinking, like, if this was an interview I was doing for my show, man, oh, man, there'd be a lot of editing to do. That's what I was thinking.
I think you just like to say man, oh man.
But you were happy with that interview.
Well, it didn't hurt.
You didn't say anything that you regret.
I did no harm.
Okay.
First do no harm.
Whoops. Let's move on to Brett.
Isn't that the dumbest slogan for a medical profession?
Do no harm.
First, that's the first rule, do no harm.
Don't make things worse.
Don't make things worse.
One. The number you have reached is not in service.
No. No, come on
trouble
now.
Trouble ahead.
One.
No.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Why don't we give out our phone number? Maybe someone wants to interview us. 10 minutes.
We're trying to call Brett from Up All Night at Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia.
It's good.
Hello?
Hi, Brett. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, Brett.
Can you hear me?
We can. Thanks for thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah. Thanks now, for
now
having
Brett,
me.
Oh, you're sweet. Brett, did you hear the last interview we did?
Yeah, I did.
Your opening act? What were your impressions of his skill set as an interviewer? Exactly.
I wasn't really going to go for those kind of questions.
Oh, okay.
I hope my questions aren't too serious.
So you were not going to ask if we prefer to go down a slide or go on a swing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or like.
Well, what can we do for you, Brett?
All right. So I'd like to start off by asking Ken. What his visit to Co-op Radio was like in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, I visited Co-op Radio in Vancouver because I was in Vancouver for the World Community Radio Conference, either the first or second AMARC conference. And I just remember it being a very cool place, and the station manager was very friendly and showed us around. And this was pre-internet, so I recall that there being a wall with just tons of writing all over it and correspondence from listeners and just tons of postcards and letters from listeners on the wall, which is not something you find at radio stations anymore.
Yeah, I've actually not been in yet since I just started like a few months ago.
Oh, you started during the pandemic.
So I haven't seen what it's like in there. So I'm not sure if that wall is still there.
Now you can edit Ken's response out, right? I mean, that was radio death.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll just be me talking.
Yeah.
I also, are you still doing stand-up by any chance, or when was the last time you did stand-up?
No, I haven't done it in quite a while. Andy, have you done any stand-up recently?
No, I might have been with you at some little venue.
Yeah.
I learned very quickly that, it's a very, very hard art form. And B, I wasn't born to do it. It didn't come naturally to me.
But you're a great joke writer.
Even that doesn't come naturally to me. I mean, I have a skill set. It's mostly, I think, structural. Structuring stories is what I do best. I mean, there are joke writers, many joke writers, stronger than me.
Oh, come on. Bring your daughter to Orgasm Day. That's a great joke.
Yeah, that's a great joke.
That's a great joke.
I peaked right there.
Yeah.
Have you ever written jokes for stand-up, like for somebody else?
Are you asking me or Ken?
Andy, yeah.
Well, it doesn't come. It's not what I was born to do, and it doesn't come naturally to me. When I was at Letterman, my first job was for David Letterman. For the first year, I was writing sketches and man on the street interviews type stuff, and what they used to call desk pieces. He would sit at the desk and more conceptual stuff. And then a year into the show, and I was having the best time ever, best job of my life. And then about a year into the show, Letterman came to me and said, hey, I'd love you to start contributing monologue jokes to the opening monologue every show. And that kind of, suddenly my job was not as much fun.
Wow.
Because it was very, very hard work for me. There were some writers there. There was Steve O'Donnell was there. Jerry Mulligan was there. They would write dozens of jokes every day, and I would really struggle to get three or four written.
Interesting. Did any of your jokes make it into the monologue?
Oh yeah, but I got my share on, but it was really hard for me. The first joke I had on in a monologue was that There were 500,000 people came to Vatican Square to see see Pope Paul, although a lot of them were probably there to see the opening act, Eddie Rabbit. I remember that was my first joke.
But you wrote jokes for Steve Martin when he hosted.
Oh, yes, that's it. Later. That's right. I did write jokes for Steve Martin at the Academy Award. And that I got that job because I wrote one joke, and I knew when I wrote it, it was the best joke I'd ever written. And I sent it to Steve Martin. When it was announced that he was hosting, I had an address for him. And I sent it to him, and he hired me based on that one joke.
What was the joke?
The joke was this. Maybe our critics are right. Maybe movies are becoming too violent. I took a 10-year-old boy to see the movie Gladiator, and he cried the whole time, although it might have been because he didn't know who I was. Now, that's a joke. That's a pedophile joke.
Yes.
You can't make pedophile jokes anymore.
Did he use...
Oh, yeah. No, it killed.
Did he? And he used it during...
On the Academy Awards.
Wow. Times have changed.
Yeah. You can't make jokes anymore because jokes hurt.
Yes.
Suddenly.
They do.
They suddenly hurt you.
No, they're painful.
Yeah. You can really feel it when a joke offends you.
Yeah. Did you do any top tens on Letterman?
No, that was... I left before top tens were instituted.
Oh, yeah.
You were there for the Larry Bud Melman period, though.
Yeah, the early... I was there when he first went on the air at NBC.
Cool. Thanks. You kind of asked some of my questions there, Ken. That's cool. Thanks.
No problem.
I tried to do a little more research into your career, Andy, so I watched Godfather Part 2, but I fell asleep. So...
Oh, you know what? That's actually a great setup because my son, Evan, who is funnier than me now, at 14, he's much funnier than I was at 14, and he writes great jokes, and he said this to me a couple weeks ago. He said, "Hey, Dad, I have a great idea for a movie. It's a prequel to The Godfather Part 2." Now, that's a great joke.
Yeah, you told that joke last week.
I did?
Yeah.
Wait, I did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did?
Yeah.
On the radio?
Yeah.
On this, and was it broadcast?
On this program, yeah.
I hope I gave Evan credit last week, too.
Yes, you did. You did.
I got to start paying attention while I talk.
Yeah.
Andy, is it true that you used to busk on the street?
Yes, it is true. I had 4 minutes of jokes, just one-line jokes. And I would open a little case, guitar case on the at my feet and tell these 4 minutes of jokes in a continuous loop. And that was how I made it. And the secret about busking is you can make a lot of money. Like in the summer in a park with their tourists around, I could cover my nut in one day at the park, cover my weekly nut. But I'll tell you something else funny. In New York City, if you don't have a guitar, you're not singing, and you're just on the street yelling at people, just saying your jokes, people think you're nuts. So I used to bring my girlfriend, my soon-to-be wife, Mary, I used to bring her. She had to come with me and stand in front of me and laugh and occasionally drop coins into my case.
Oh, my God.
Otherwise, people just would think I'm a homeless, ranting maniac.
Why didn't you just hold a guitar?
Well, because I wasn't playing guitar. I was doing my stand-up shtick. And it was all just old vaudeville jokes.
Oh, I remember. I've seen it. You did it on a set, on an early episode of 7 Second Delay.
But you can make some real money. You can really do well.
So you could cover your rent working one day a week.
You have to stake out your corner. And because people, you know, in the high traffic areas, you know, there's a lot of competition.
Yeah, well, Washington Square Park has come back to life. I don't know if you've been following what's been going on there.
I hear they're enforcing a curfew.
Drug dealers are back, baby.
Yeah.
I have a few questions about Monk, if that's okay.
Sure, buddy. Wait, I feel bad you're ignoring my partner, Ken.
Not a problem.
Damn it.
Did you know the ending of Monk, like when you started it?
That's a great question. I think a lot of shows like that have one, you know, big meta story I think they start and they have no idea. I believe that show Lost, I would argue, they had no idea where they were going. And Monk, to be honest with you, when I wrote the pilot and the hero's wife had been killed with a car bomb, I never in a million years thought in eight seasons, I'd have to solve that murder. It never even occurred to me. So the answer to that is no, I didn't solve it. And when we had to solve it in the eighth season, the writing staff and I had to work backwards and figure out and remember all the clues we had dropped. And very, very quickly, if you find, then I had another show. I had another show on Netflix where there was also a meta story. A guy's wife had been hitting Tony Danza's wife was killed with a hit and run driver.
Oh, the good cop.
Yeah, the good cop. And in that case, I said, okay, I'm not making the same mistake twice. I'm going to figure out the whole story, the whole big, long, eight-season-long story before I even begin. And I established the story in season one, but I had it all worked out, 7 years' worth, and it was canceled at the end of season one. And not a single person, and I mean no one in my family, no listener on this radio station, not my best friend Ken, no one ever asked how that story might have ended.
That's really funny because people actually did ask me.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
No one ever asked me. It just seemed like it was just like a fart in a dust storm. Aww. Just gone forever.
Aww. Poor Andy.
When was the last time you heard someone say fart in a dust storm?
I don't think I've ever heard
it. It's been too long.
Yeah.
Was Dale the Whale based off a real person?
Dale the Whale. Well, I was looking for a Moriarty. You know, it was kind of inspired by Sherlock Holmes. And Sherlock Holmes had a villain that, you know, had a...
A nemesis
yeah. that he was yeah. obsessed with. And then I thought it would be funny if a guy was like 700 pounds.
Yeah.
I thought that would be funny.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
Oh, that means the world to me. Thanks for watching.
Any chance of a Monk reunion or like a movie?
Well, I did actually write one. I was commissioned to write one, and I wrote one, but then they budgeted it out, and it came in pretty, it was pretty expensive. It took place on Mars, and I insisted they actually go to Mars.
Yeah, that was a big mistake.
Now, in hindsight, you know, they could have green screened it.
Yeah.
I could have cut that scene. It was just one scene.
Jeez. Talk about self-sabotage.
So maybe I'll kind of end on this question, but... since I'm pretty new at broadcasting, I was just wondering if you had any advice for a new broadcaster or how do you guys, more for Ken in your morning show, how do you come up with bits as like a solo broadcaster when you're not with Andy?
You mean my Wednesday morning time slot program?
Yeah.
He's referring specifically to the bits.
The bits. Yeah, I don't put
well,
a lot of work.
I mostly play music. But.
I don't put a lot of work into the bits. I can tell you that.
The bits are pretty itty bitty.
They are really itty bitty, and I don't plan them out ahead of time.
Huh.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Believe it or not. I sometimes have a single piece of paper. And as I'm listening to the music for the show, I might jot down some ideas here and there.
It's your Bert bit sheet.
My Bert bit sheet?
No, it's bit sheet, where you jot down bit ideas.
Right, right. Yes.
Cool. Yeah. Any advice for a new broadcaster? Kind of been struggling recording in my own office.
Huh.
Not being on live on air, but
I guess imagine one person who you're comfortable with and pretend that you're speaking with that one person. Okay, if cool. you over prepare, prepare less. If you under prepare, prepare more.
Great. Yeah, sounds like good advice.
And of course, the bit sheet.
The bit sheet. Don't forget the bit sheet.
And I could just add to that: try as hard as you can to succeed.
Right.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
Don't forget, people are always tuning in. Lots of people tuned in right after you made that horrible mistake.
Well, it's not true in our case, but it might be true in his case.
No, it's true in some cases.
Yeah.
I think I have like three listeners. at the moment. So.
Do you know their names?
One of them is my mother-in-law.
What's her name?
Her name is Bridget.
Hey, Bridget.
Hi, Bridget.
We're sending out all our love to you from Jersey City.
I love Bridget more than you do, Andy.
Who else is listening?
Probably my partner, and I think Joe. There's a guy named Joe listening right
hey,
now.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe. Hey, Joe.
And Brett, what's your partner's name? You can make up a
Esther.
Name. Esther. Hi, Esther.
Yeah.
Hey,
Bridget,
Joe. Hey, Bridget.
Bridget, Esther, and Joe. You can't do better than that. Why would you need any more than that?
Yeah. It's true. Any more, I'd probably start to regret sharing my show with anyone.
Well, Brett, Bridget is indicating to us that it's time to go.
Okay.
So,
well, thanks a lot for having me. Thanks for the interview.
Hey, thanks. Thank you for having us on Up All Night on Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah. You can listen to it at coopradio.org.
And when is it going to air?
Sunday night, 9 Pacific.
9 Pacific. Sunday night, 9 yep. Pacific. Up All Night with Brett. Okay, thanks, Brett.
Yep. Thank you.
Bye-bye. How did you feel about that one, Andy?
How did you feel about that one?
Okay. It was mostly an interview of you.
I'm glad he didn't tell me beforehand that Bridget and Joe and...
And who?
Sylvia, whatever her name.
Esther.
Esther. We're listening. I would have gotten kind of nervous.
Well, now we're calling up Aaron from Minneapolis, who's a friend of the show.
Okay.
And he does a show called Cavalcade of the Mind.
Or does, maybe he, does he really have a show?
A podcast called Cavalcade of the Mind.
Does
yes.
he really?
Yes, he
Please
does.
Say your name after the tone, and Google Voice will try to connect you.
Hi, Aaron. It's Ken and Andy. We're calling your Google Voice thing. Aaron uses text-to-speech, just
right.
so you know.
Okay. Of course, I remember well.
Yep. And his podcast, I think, is affiliated with KFAI, Community Radio from Minneapolis.
Does he know we're calling?
Fresh Air Radio. Yeah, I told him numerous times.
You have reached the Cavalcade of Whimsy on KFAI. Please leave your name, a brief message, and where you're calling from, and your message may get played on air. Thanks and take care.
You go first, Andy.
Did you tell him we were calling?
I did tell Aaron.
Did you tell him about what time we
yeah,
might be calling?
Yeah, 6:45. We're a little late.
Do you think he's just mad because we're 2 minutes late?
Maybe.
Cavalcade of Whimsy is a great name for a show.
He changed it to Cavalcade of the Mind.
Oh, Cavalcade of the Mind.
I think this is an old answering machine. I hope this is not our interview, Aaron. Aaron, call us back at 201-209-9368 if you'd like to do the interview. I know you've been working hard preparing for it for 2 weeks now. So.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. I guess I'll call him back.
Do you have a plan B?
Hell no.
Maybe somebody out there wants to interview us. Maybe.
Well, let me try Aaron one more time.
Okay.
Because Google Voice, of course, can be weird because it's
Please state your
Google.
Name after the tone, and Google Voice will try to connect you.
Well, let me say my name.
Go ahead.
Hey, Aaron, it's Andy. It's Andy.
Oh, that worked. This feels more promising to me now. We're trying to reach Aaron for our final interview. The concept of tonight's show is that we were going to be interviewed
by 20 people.
By 20 podcasters.
Because everybody has a podcast.
Except for the man without a podcast. He doesn't have one.
He has a very small one. It's on
you
monthly.
You have reached the Cavalcade.
Oh,
my
friend.
Oh, Aaron. Aaron.
Oh, buddy. Message. I hope he's okay.
Where yeah, me
calling
too.
Calling from and your message.
Okay, well, we're available for a final interview if somebody wants to call us at 201-209-9368. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Aaron speaking.
Oh, great.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Loud and clear.
How are you two doing?
Is that your first question?
I'm doing okay.
I'm doing okay. Fair to middling.
Andy sucks,
look,
actually.
Andy, all of my replies are pre-written out, so don't try to ask me anything.
So you must have anticipated that. I'm very impressed.
Aaron's always thinking.
He's thinking, one step ahead.
Okay, I am set. I have an introduction ready and loaded. Ken, I just have to ask you to promise me you won't be tempted to break away mid-interview and play a bagpipe version of Toxic. I know it's tempting, but try not to, for me.
Aaron, if I found a bagpipe version of Toxic, I would cut away in an instant.
And now on Aaron's Cavalcade of the Mind, we are doing a crossover episode of sorts, with a segment recorded at the same time as the Fuzzy Glove Hour from the world-famous WFMU Freeform Radio in Jersey City, New Jersey. I am honored to welcome to the show two radio legends, in their own mind, host of the Fuzzy Glove Hour, Mr. Andy Breckman Mann and Ken Friedman.
Hi, Aaron. We're happy to be here on the Cavalcade of the Mind.
Thanks for extending this very, very
How
kind
are you
invitation.
Doing?
Andy sucks. I'm doing okay.
I don't suck as bad as I do sometimes. It's all relative.
So I have to ask about this movie you wrote, quote, comedy, unquote, for Hot to Trot?
Yeah.
Was it like a remake of Mistred?
I don't know the movie. I don't know that reference, Mistred.
Mistred.
Hot to Trot, I did. I was under contract at Warner Brothers, and they had a movie starring Bobcat Goldthwait and a talking horse, and it was testing terribly, and they asked me to write some jokes, to rewrite it, but I could only write the horse lines because the rest of the movie was locked. But the horse just opened his mouth, you know, he just chomped his lips, so you could put any lines in there. I don't think maybe one of my lines survived, but it was an interesting challenge, but it was a terrible movie. I remember I went to see it it had opened, you know, and it was a week later I went to see it because I wanted to see it in the theaters before it closed. And I went to the box office and I said, one please. And the box office guy, oh no, the box office woman said this. She said, you know, it's Hot to Trot. As if there must be some mistake.
But they sold you the ticket.
Yeah, they sold me the ticket.
Well, see, it could have been worse.
She was warning me.
It could have been worse. Because I went to see Battlefield Earth with John Travolta.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't sell me a ticket because not enough people had shown up to see the movie.
Oh, yes. I've been there, too. They used to need like three people minimum before they showed a movie. I once went to see a movie that I had another line in. I get one or two lines sometimes in these movies. It was Beverly Hills Cop 3. I had a line or two in that. And I went to my local theater to see it, but there weren't enough people. There were only me and one other person. And they wouldn't show it until a third person came. So I went outside, and there was a kid. Like, it looked like an FMU listener, frankly. He was hanging out by the railway station across the street from the theater. And I yelled across the street. I said, hey, you want to see this Eddie Murphy movie with me? And you know what the kid said?
Get away from me.
No. He said, sure. Isn't that the most frightening thing you ever heard?
Yeah.
He was fine with it.
So that's how you came up with that joke for Steve Martin.
Maybe, yeah. But he had zero questions. Who are you? Do I have to sit next to you? Do I have to perform any sort of act with you?
He was probably a hooker.
What's in it for you? What's in it for me? But he had no questions.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So Hot to Trot was a remake of Mistred.
I don't remember that. I don't know that reference.
But that's what you're saying.
I guess I'll say yes.
Yes. Yes, it was a remake of Mistred.
TV show.
Yes, the TV.
Mistred.
Yes, the TV show Mistred.
Oh, Mr. Ed. Oh, I'm sorry. Your voice to speech.
Oh, was, Mr. Ed.
I was a little. Oh, it was a retread. You're exactly right. It was inspired by Mr. Ed.
Mr. Ed.
And by inspired by, I mean it was stolen. Right. Outright.
Right. A horse is a horse, of course, of course.
So I have this fascination, maybe even unhealthy, of Andy Bregman's song, Railroad Bill, a classic in the rare genre of folk comedy. See, Andy has a long career writing comedy. I would like to do a brief oral history of the song, if I may.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Please.
Andy, how did you come up with the song where the narrator turns into a vengeful god and basically murders our hero, Railroad Bill?
I don't remember. I remember where I was when I wrote it, but I don't remember how I wrote it. I guess I was just being contrary and writing sort of an anti-folk song.
Hero is a strong word, I guess. Railroad Bill turned into a jerk.
That's right. Railroad Bill, the person who's singing the song can't get the subject of the song, Railroad Bill, to do what he says. And they end up arguing with each other, and they end up going at each other's throats by the last verse. It is a classic, at least in my little career. It's actually been covered two or three times.
In the realm of folk comedy, gold standard, I'd say.
It's not the gold standard. I think if you scratch off the song, the gold is...
Well, what's the gold standard of folk comedy, if not Railroad Bill?
I like the song Daughter. Do you know that song? Mm-hmm. Loudon Wainwright sings it?
No.
I think that's a very funny song.
Oh, well, you're cheating if you include Loudon Wainwright.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Because he's better than me.
Right.
Damn him. I've actually gotten to know him a little bit.
So did Dr. Demento ever play Railroad Bill?
I know Dr. Demento's played some of my songs.
Wow.
Because I've heard over the years that he's played them. You know, I get royalties for these songs, and you can see that they're only played three or four times a year total worldwide. I actually wrote a movie called True Identity years ago.
I saw it.
Oh, you did not.
I did.
And then last year I got a royalty check for True Identity. This is not a joke. I should have framed it. 1 cent.
Really?
Yes. Somebody, some...
Why do they bother...
That's right. The stamp costs 50 cents.
Yeah, why do they...
I have no idea.
Wow.
But it means that somewhere in Asia, some streaming service played at one time or something.
Wow. We're almost out of time.
Boys,
yes.
This has been a pleasure.
Thank
you for your time and information.
Thank you. Your questions were great, and it was great talking to you again.
Thank you, Aaron. And that was Aaron.
Have a good one.
Aaron from Minneapolis, who has a podcast. I think you can probably get it through the KFAI website. It's called Cavalcade of the Mind. And this has been the Fuzzy Glove Hour. We have a new outro for the Fuzzy Glove Hour, Andy.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org.
And this has been WFMU East Orange. Oh, same thing. Same station.
Exactly what I just said.
All right. I just wanted to cover those bases.
Yeah. Andy, can't you see? I'm calling. Stay tuned for Matt Fibash and Weekly World Blues. Oh, and thank you to Jeremiah for the newsletter.
As always.
There's no escape. I can't wait. Andy Bregman. You're dangerous, I'm gloving it. Too high, can't calm down. Losing my head, spinning round and round. Do you feel me now? With a tombstone. I'm
Sound of the blues scale. The blues scale is very simple, very useful, but also very simple to build. All you have to do is know your minor pentatonic scales. So in this case, I was playing A.
Blues come so many different ways until it's kind of hard to explain.
Thank you. Emo, 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 emo